Shema
Israel. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
All your body is
the eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today is entitled The Man from Omaha and was written by Arnold Pearl and A.S. Guinness. Arnold Moss is the narrator, and featured as Henry Monsky is Roger DeCoven.
Airport on a Thursday afternoon not so long ago, a great silver bird of a plane ended its flight across the ocean, and the last passenger to step out was a rumpled little man clutching a cardboard suitcase in one hand and a map of New York in the other. To the first attendant he saw, he pointed to the map and asked,
Brooklyn?
Well, here's where you are, buddy. Queens. You see?
Queens.
So you take the train to Manhattan.
Manhattan? 99 Brooklyn.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You take the train to Manhattan.
99 Brooklyn.
So that's what I'm telling you.
Mind if I take over? I think I can help.
The man who spoke was a tall man with a calm face, sad eyes, and a big, friendly smile. The attendant, being a man with a large family and a small income, had other worries and was glad to be out of it.
Shalom, brother. Welcome to our land.
Shalom, shalom. What is with your land? For 6 years I have fled from one corner of the world to the other and back again. And in all this time of necessity, I have become an expert with maps. Tell me a land and I will tell you how many borders it has which a man can cross at night. But Brooklyn?
But what is so forbidding about our Brooklyn?
I'm standing in Queens. Beside me, on the map, lies Brooklyn. Well, then why must I go first to Manhattan? Do I look like the father of fools?
You're right. The attendant was right. But to go directly to Brooklyn as on the map would cost you 3 train fares. Whereas to go by way of Manhattan, it's only 1 fare.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it's one of America's unsolved problems.
So I'm still an old fool, even in a new land. Tell me, do you have a little time?
Yes, a little. The plane to Omaha doesn't leave for a while.
So the tall man and the rumpled little one sat in the waiting room and talked of this and that, and especially of Jewish life. And when the plane to Omaha was announced, the man with the map at first looked sad. And then suddenly his face lit up.
Listen, my friend, I have made a decision.
A decision? Concerning what?
Concerning Brooklyn and Omaha. I'm going with you.
Well, you'd be more than welcome, but you came all the way with Brooklyn as yours.
Please, please. I am a man of decisions. In Brooklyn, what have I got? A townsman I haven't seen in 30 years. So I will write to him. But with you, I have only spent 20 minutes with you. But even if there is only one man like you in all of Omaha, it is still a city worth settling in.
You may well ask, who was this tall man with a calm face that he could have such an effect on people? He was a friend of mine. Henry Monsky was a very close friend. It's only right, don't you think, that today his very close friends should think of him? You see, Henry Monsky passed away a year ago
today.
You want to know what kind of a man he was? A man. No more, no less. A man who grew up in Omaha and fished in the Missouri River, who read Mark Twain and Maimonides, and learned at one and the same time that all men are created equal and Hine Matov Umanaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. How good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell in unity. The year was a memorable one. 1905, Kishinev, a lesson in how to conduct a pogrom. And when news reached the frontier town of Omaha, Reb Abraham, elder of the synagogue, called his 15-year-old son, Henry, to him. Together they made their way to the other side of town, to the home of the most influential Jew in Omaha. Henry waited outside for 10 minutes, a half hour, an hour. Then he saw his father come out. The boy walked alongside Reb Abraham, waiting for him to speak.
I stretched out my right hand to him. In Kishinev, I said, the trees cry and the winds weep for our brothers. And he said he wasn't made of stone, and in all his nightmares he saw Kishinev. And I answered him, I saw Kishinev in my waking hours as well.
Father.
Yes?
Father, what was it you wanted from him?
Not money, my son. Not his influence in high places. These I know he gives. He offered to sign an even larger check. I said, no, that's only charity. There's more, there's much more we must do. I offered him my hand. I said, we must unite, we must work together to build the kind of world where these things will not happen.
And he rejected your hand?
He smiled, he shrugged, he thought I was a fool. He did not say it, but I know. He said, I've given money, what more can I do? Nothing more.
But you were right. Why is it so hard for people to see, not only Jews, but everyone? Everyone should work together and stop this horrible thing like Kishinev.
Not with anger, my son.
I'm sorry, Father. But when will people see?
I'm afraid, my son, only when the world has experienced a Kishinev 1,000 times more terrible.
And that evening, as Reb Abraham sat watching his wife clear the kitchen table...
Betsy...
Yes, Avram.
Henry, he went out?
With friends.
Betsy, today I heard our son answer a man 3 times his age. 3 times his age.
And who?
Myself.
Haven't you learned yet, husband mine, that in this land age is considered an affliction and not a mantle of wisdom? Why should it surprise you, then, that our son should speak boldly to an older man?
Because, my impatient wife, what I want to tell you is not that he spoke up, but rather that my son, the rabbi-to-be, spoke with great wisdom.
And why should it surprise you, Avrum, that my son, the lawyer-to-be, should speak with great wisdom?
And when, a few years later, Reb Abraham's wife proved to be right, and Henry chose the law instead of the pulpit, his father felt a bit sad. But on a certain day in 1912, when Henry Monsky stood before his graduating class, Reb Abraham looked at his wife and smiled tearfully. For here in America, their son has chosen for his valedictory text the Hebrew words,
Hine matov uma naim, jevetahim gam yahad. How good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell in unity.
The twig was bent, and so the tree grew.
Sit down, please.
Thank you.
You both look as if you've traveled far.
Oh, we have, very far.
There are 3 of us.
3?
Sarah is playing in your front yard. It is such a long time since she touched grass.
A new kind of child, Sarah. In her 8 years, she has known wagons, trains, boats. but no home.
Where do you come from?
A village near Kharkov. We left the day the pogrom struck our village.
We hope in California. Is it really, as they say, the sun?
Well, I've never been there myself. I hear it has a climate such as they have in Palestine.
Oh. Your father, Rat Abraham, does not know us. But we heard from others that he sometimes helps people. Strangers, even like us.
Sarah, we would not have gotten off the train, but Sarah is still a bit weak. We hope a few days' rest, then I could help around the house meanwhile.
Your father...
My father passed away 6 months ago.
The good. Always the good.
Oh, had we known...
This is my father's house. I'm his son. Please stay.
When a man and an idea become one, the result is more than the sum of the two. The result sometimes is inspiration. Others saw it, too, in Henry Monsky.
Mr. Monsky, they're here.
They? The bishop called to say he was coming over. I didn't know.
There's another priest with him. Mr. Monsky.
What is it, Esther? Something on your mind?
You won't forget about this afternoon, will you?
This afternoon? What?
Now, what would you do without me?
I know, Esther. They'd never find me under untyped law briefs, unanswered correspondence.
And unstrung clients, if you don't mind my saying so. This afternoon, you promised to see that man from the railroad. A very sizable account, and I have a suspicion the client's growing restless at not being able to see you.
I promise, Esther. Now, won't you do me a favor and send in the bishop and his friend?
Kindly, Esther shook her head over the impractical ways of her brilliant employer and went out to fetch his friend, the bishop.
Congratulations, Henry. I saw the news in the papers. You've gone far, Henry.
I chose a long road, Bishop.
It's a road that gets a bit lonesome, son. I brought you someone traveling your way. This is my good friend, Father Flanagan. He has an idea, Henry. A haven for boys. A new approach to juvenile delinquency. A place he'd like to call Boys Town.
And for 2 hours they talked. The bishop, Father Flanagan, and my friend Henry Monsky, of boys and the social evils which make them bad, and of a dream to be known as Boys Town. And then...
What's the point of just sitting here? Father Flanagan has the site for Boys Town all picked out. Why don't we drive out there and spend the afternoon? How about it, Henry?
Well, of course, there's no time to be lost, but you'll have to do me a favor, Bishop.
Certainly. What can I do?
I'll meet you downstairs. I'll have to sneak out the back way. Little matter between me and my secretary.
Is there any difference between an uprooted family from across the ocean or a group of uprooted boys in their own land? To my friend, there was none. And so he gave himself to this task of helping to bring to life Boys Town. But the road he had chosen was long. And on top of it all, Esther was right. There were times when Henry was, well, hard to manage.
There's no question, Mr. Monsky, but that your services to our railroad have been excellent. Very excellent.
Yours is an honest railroad.
Then do this job for us. It's just another unfair tax bill. All we ask is that you speak out against the bill.
A slight correction, Mr. Reynolds. The tax bill is not unfair. It's to raise additional funds for the state school system. Naturally, the roads are expected to pay their share.
Remember, Mr. Monsky, Omaha is a relatively small city, and ours is a big account. I'm not pressing you for an answer now. We'll expect to hear from you in 2 days.
Why wait? As of now, I am the unofficial lobbyist for the bill.
Us a nation, Mr. Monsky. What is it you want for yourself?
You're his wife, Daisy. I wish you could talk to him.
What's it all about?
If he wants to act mysterious, let him. In these days, it's the privilege of any man who's spent a week in Washington to look mysterious.
Oh, all right, both of you. But I warn you, what I have to say is no joking matter. I have never been more serious in my life.
If this were a courtroom, Sig, that phrase would reveal you as a very guilty man. Oh. What have you done?
Daisy, I've known you since you were a young girl, and now you're married to Henry. He's always been too busy with community activities to build up his personal career.
Uh-oh. He's been talking things over with your secretary, Henry, with Esther.
What's more, Henry hasn't even begun to use his amazing legal ability in the way that he should.
Now I'm sure of it.
All right, laugh. But I'll tell you this. I, who am financially more secure than Henry ever will be, would feel that I could not afford the sacrifice that he is now being asked to make.
Sig, come to the point. What's this about?
Henry, they want you to become national president of B'nai B'rith. All right, you never listen to me anyway. I'll make the nominating speech.
When they accepted him unanimously, he was too overcome for words, and his wife led him from the meeting place, and she brought him the strength and composure she was always able to give him. And when he returned dry-eyed, he said, among other things,
"We must build with vision, but we must build upon realities. If we build upon ideals alone, oblivious of reality, we shall find in the end that we've built upon quicksand, and the reality of today is that we are divided. In the face of a Kishinev 1,000 times more terrible."
The rabbis once said, "A man who is going nowhere is never challenged." My friend Mr. Monsky was soon being challenged 100 times a day.
We've doubled our membership in 1 year. Mr. Monsky, aren't we growing a little too fast? I'm worried.
So am I. We're not growing fast enough.
Or else?
Mr. Monsky, my organization and yours are cooperating in a number of projects, as you know. And, naturally, my membership is curious about you personally.
Naturally.
Mr. Monsky, are you Orthodox, conservative, or Reformed?
All, madam, for I am a Jew.
And on still another occasion.
This is a key matter, Mr. Monsky. Before we can even sit down at the same table, you must state your position on Palestine.
It has already been stated for me.
Really? By whom?
By a boy in a hospital bed. His nurse wrote the letter for him because now he has no hands. "We didn't die in the forests when we fought against the Germans," he writes. "We will find a way. That way is to Palestine."
Many thousands joined, men and women, young men, young women, even children. But all this time, the fireplace in Omaha was far away. Daisy had to be satisfied with telephone calls like this one.
Hello? Hello? Henry, is that you?
Hello, Daisy. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, dear, yes. Where are you?
In the White House.
In the White House? Henry.
I had lunch with Mrs. Roosevelt.
Oh, how wonderful. What did she serve?
Huh?
Oh, I'm dying to know, dear. What did she serve?
Well, how should I know, Daisy?
Well, you ate it, didn't you?
Well, we talked.
But you said it was luncheon.
Well, then I must have eaten.
And you don't remember what?
Of course I remember. I remember every word she said.
Now it was the winter of 1942, and Kishinev had been repeated 1,000 times and then 1,000 times again, and still there was no end to the scourge. My friend, Mr. Monsky, knew that now must be the time. And when he told Daisy, she grew worried for the first time for him, for her husband.
The call to the Unity Conference has gone out.
To 62 Jewish organizations, and in our letter we minced no words, not in these days.
Of course, the two major factions will look to you as intermediary. You'll be between the devil and the deep blue sea, Henry.
I can't imagine, dear, how you can compare either of those groups to the tranquility of the deep blue sea. Say, rather, I'll be ground between two millstones.
Although with Daisy, he'd spoken lightly of his own burden. He could not hide his doubts from himself as he stood there on the platform that fateful day. The American Jewish Conference was now officially open. His tired heart beat faster as the various blocks, each a separate idea and a separate program, announced their presence. Now they waited for him to speak. The opening words, those would be important. The very first words.
Ine matov umanaim. Shevet achim gam yachat.
How good, how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell in unity.
Was it any better tonight, Henry?
Oh, somewhat, Daisy, somewhat. But it seems ever more difficult.
Henry, you're not a youngster. 3 a.m. tonight, 2 a.m. last night, and the night before it was...
Ine matov manoim shevet achim gam yachad. They translate it the way Rabbi Gottheil once did, how good and how pleasant it is if we can get the brethren merely to sit together. That's not enough. Sitting together is not enough. We must think and feel together.
Perhaps, Henry, yours is a stronger faith. Sometimes I look at what's happening to our people through the world. I look at the way you're killing yourself, and I'm afraid. Sometimes I'm afraid the lights are going out for us.
No, Daisy, our people have no special lights illuminating their way. The sun, the moon, the stars, we share with the world. If the lights go out for us, it is because the lights are going out the world over.
He fought for his own vision of life. He led a national campaign against juvenile delinquency. And against delinquency of government, he fought as consultant to the United States delegation at San Francisco. And then a year ago today in a New York hotel, he was conducting a meeting of the conference's interim committee when...
Lewis, please take a chair. I feel weak suddenly.
They took him upstairs. He asked for his wife. And when she arrived...
Where is he?
Right in there, Mrs. Monsky.
Henry.
Madam, can you take shorthand? I asked for a secretary. I have a report to dictate and... It's broadcast tonight.
I'm sorry, Mr. Munsky. I'm not so good at dictation, but may I hold your hand?
You know what happened? I thought of all the things I had to do, and I got dizzy. Silly, what?
Henry. Henry.
The doctor said...
His heart actually ruptured, Mrs. Monsky.
It broke for his people, doctor.
And that's the story of my very close friend. One more word. A historian of dates and places and names would say that because I'd never really met Henry Monsky personally, I shouldn't call him a close friend. Well, that isn't quite right either. He was a close friend. After all, Henry Monsky was Henry Monsky. And I, like him, a man, no more, no less. What would a historian know about such friendships?
And now we present Mr. Frank Goldman, president of B'nai B'rith. Mr. Goldman.
The greatness of our country rests upon the idealism and the contributions of the various groups who make up its population and of their leaders. Henry Monsky, who passed on a year ago today, had then served for 9 years as president of B'nai B'rith, the world's oldest and largest Jewish service organization. His greatness lay in the possession to a marked degree of the finer qualities of mind and heart. These permitted him no narrow horizon, but rather prompted him to lay aside his own comfort and to devote himself to the welfare and well-being of people everywhere. He was an American citizen of the first order. His whole life was an expression of the finest ideals of the double heritage which was his, Judaism and Americanism. As a little boy in Omaha, he constantly observed his mother and father welcome into their Orthodox Jewish home and help on their way to the far west, poor, ragged, and often weeping strangers, the European displaced of their time. Through his parents' approach to this problem, he learned in a most natural way that this was not charity, but rather human solidarity, and it was a lesson he never, never forgot. As he grew to manhood, he was always animated in everything he did by this sense of the brotherhood of man under the fatherhood of God. It was that which inspired him to give so much of himself to the general social causes, as well as to B'nai B'rith, the development of Palestine as a Jewish homeland, and other movements in behalf of his people. It was that, too, basically, which moved him to found the American Jewish Conference, to cope with the war and post-war emergency facing the Jewish people overseas and in Palestine. He believed in common action, in unity for the accomplishment of a worthy purpose, but he was not beguiled by the use of the word unity or any other catchphrase to mistake form for substance or to see unity where there was only pretense. We who have survived him have dedicated ourselves to emulating his spirit, his devotion, his courage, and his passion for working toward a better world for all mankind. Truly can it be said on this first anniversary of Henry Monsky's passing, his memory is for a blessing.
Thank you, Mr. Frank Goldman. Eternal Light drama today, entitled The Man from Omaha, was written by Arnold Pearl and A.S. Guinness. This script was based upon the recently published book Henry Monsky, The Man and His Work by Mrs. Henry Monsky and Maurice Biscaya. The original music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Catens. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Arnold Moss was the narrator. Featured as Henry Monsky was Roger DeCoven. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Pack.